and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
Do tell, Bill. Do we have a sponsor this hour?
Well, we do. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer, and they've got everything you could imagine when it comes to John Deere, and they can work on pretty much any tractor out there. Just give them a call. Their phone number is 226-9226, and they're located up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, just south of Phil's Propeller, between Oasis and Pine Grove in Shasta Lake City. So go up and see them, and they can get you fixed up. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. I think now they have over 40 locations on the Ag and Turf stores. So if they don't have it in Shasta Lake, they got lots of stores to draw from.
You start at the Canadian border up in Washington and drive to Sacramento.
Yeah. Pretty much.
You have Pape Machinery.
Yeah. They've got Washington all the way. Yeah, you're right. All the way down.
I know. I don't say it unless I'm right.
Just in the
unless
Ag
I start
and
laughing
Turf.
And
well,
then,
if you want to go the whole Pape group, they've got about 150 stores.
Oh, wow.
So go up and see them.
Kind of fun. Well, our guest today is William Walter Kay. He is an author and a political commentator who lives in a tricky place in Canada outside of Alberta that I can't pronounce or spell. But I will look it up and put it on the website eventually. I just hadn't done that yet. He has a law degree and specializes in Canadian constitutional law, which gives him a really interesting vantage point, and he can help us when we don't...
I took as many constitutional law classes as I can. Almost nobody makes their living in constitutional law.
No, but at least you know it
extensively at the university level.
It's pretty. It's pretty fun. You also had a radio program in Vancouver, and then free speech haters, the environmentalist crowd drove you off the air.
Drove that off, but that was a nice war. That was fighting the good fight for sure.
Because that's how we met you, was through your website, Environmentalism is Fascism. We always talked about that. I should mention
one of the great tragedies of this whole COVID thing is it's taken 2 years out of everybody's life.
Yes.
You know, I did not plan, like I've probably written two dozen COVID articles. I want to get back to doing the writing that I was doing before this. It's been just a huge distraction.
Yeah, because the last few shows we did with you
whacked everybody.
Yeah, they were about Black Lives Matter, and also back in May of 2020, we did a show with you with the nursing home about the nursing home deaths when the media was still saying that was not happening.
Oh yeah, you were way ahead of the curve on that.
Ahead of the curve.
Never be forgotten, you know.
No.
Cuomo and those guys, they should face charges, you know, for homicide charges for what they did.
Yes, they absolutely should. At the very least, they were
forgotten. It's an integral part of it. Looking at it historically, what they did in sort of the New York, New Jersey nursing homes, that was North America's super spreader event.
Yes.
You know, they caused so much havoc. And that, if you look at it historically, that's the initial drop in the bucket, and things radiate out from that.
Yeah,
that was an absolute travesty, and exactly the same thing happened in Montreal, Canada. They just allowed it to just run rampant through the senior citizens' home.
Well, we've replayed that show several times. I just wanted to let people know that we're airing this live on February 20th, 2022. So if there are, you know, things, incidents and stuff, and you're thinking, what, that happened? It's February 20th, 2022. Also on the page for today, I did link your Canada Free Press articles, a link to those, and also to Global Research, a center for research on globalism. So you have a much wider breadth of information than just what we're talking about today. And
I write for about two dozen different websites. It's always hit or miss. You know, I never bother pandering them. I just send them out there. There's several that have been pretty reliable posting my stuff, but there's always, you know, everyone's got their agenda, right? And everyone sort of picks and chooses, which is fine. But like what I was trying to write about, which I know Canada Free Press wouldn't touch, is my belief that, you know, it's a lot of these big trucking firms were quite happy with the mandate in Canada. It's the same in the States. Right now, there's over 3 million truckers in the States, and about 400,000 of them are independent operators, owner-operator guys. And they're very competitive. But at the other end of the pole, you've got a lot of these big trucking companies. Just in Canada, for example, Winnipeg, which is the biggest city to the east of where I'm at, there's a family called the Richardsons, and they own 2,500 tractor trailers. So tractors, I don't know how many trailers, but they've got a huge driving force. They're called Bison. There's a family called the Bedards in Montreal, and they own one of the biggest trucking companies in North America. They've got, I think, over 7,000 tractors on
the road.
And they're active all across Quebec and all down the eastern seaboard. But if you look in the States, you know, there's you know, once again, you've got hundreds of thousands of independent operators, and then you've got a tightly concentrated group on top of companies that have thousands of tractors. And I know both TFI, that's that company out of Montreal, and Bison Trucking, in the week just prior to the announcement of the mandate on cross-border trucking, both of those corporations issued statements boasting that their truckers were almost 100% fully vaccinated. I think that Bedard family, they own TFI, they boasted that 95% of their truckers were fully vaccinated. So it was no sweat to these people, this mandate. It'd be very easy for them to shift people around. You know, if you weren't vaccinated, you wouldn't have to do the cross-border runs. But they could carry on business without any trouble at all. And all the big trucking associations in Canada, like the Canada Truckers Association and the Quebec Truckers Association, none of those supported the convoy. They all came out quite opposed to it. So it seems to me there's sort of a big trucking companies are pro-mandate because they know full well, as everybody does, that those independent truckers are not going to be 95% vaccinated. Those guys, I'd be surprised in Canada if those guys are even 50% vaccinated.
Yeah, so you crush the little independent guys.
Coming down the pipeline, you know, because those pesky little independents, they can't. It's a very competitive business,
yeah.
But these guys still manage to make a living, and a lot of that's on these truck cross-border runs. So it seemed to me these people could not have not known that passing this mandate was going to powerfully impact that section of the industry, and it was going to have no impact whatsoever on the big guys. And I think that's what's driving it, because Biden's done the same thing. So a lot of independents are going to be, you know, driven right off the road by the larger outfits, because they're going to have vaccinated workforces or enough vaccinated workforces that they're not going to miss any loads. I think that's one of the subtexts. Because from an epidemiological point of view, this didn't make any sense at all.
No, because it was
the pandemic.
Yeah.
A highly socially distanced form of occupation. This doesn't make any sense at all.
What do you see as on the long term picture coming out of this? Do you think there's going to be changes? Do you think Trudeau got kind of a wake up call and he's going to lighten up, or anything going to happen?
I think they allowed this to fester. They did not have. They could have. The RCMP is a national police force. They could have blocked these convoys a long ways from Ottawa. They just sat there and watched these guys driving there, even though the guys on their own web pages and social media were talking about overthrowing the government.
Yeah.
And they were blockading these major transborder portals. So it seems to me they deliberately allowed this to fester. I think they have a broader target of a political sort of spectrum in Canada, or a tendency in Canada, that they really want to throw the hammer at. And, it's not just going to be the truckers, and this is going to give them a license to do a lot of snooping and a lot of, seizing of accounts and a lot of the other, because once they start digging into that, there's going to be people who they can sort of taint with, various kinds of, political malfeasance. So it's got to be that. I mean, they obviously, to my mind, they let this thing happen. If they really were afraid that the truckers were going to, overrun Ottawa completely, they would have stopped them a long time ago.
Sure.
They immediately seized on it. I'm talking about Justin Trudeau and sort of the whole Liberal gang that runs Ottawa. They immediately seized on this as an opportunity to go forward. And we'll see. I have no idea what dastardly plans they have. But once they've declared the Emergencies Act, they have wide license.
Oh, sure.
They can seize bank accounts without a court order.
Yeah. Well, they've got 30 days to do a lot. Like you said, they got 30 days to do a lot of snooping and hurt a lot of people.
You can grab a lot of bank accounts.
Sure.
You can seize a lot of people's vehicles. They're canceling the commercial licenses of anybody who was involved in this convoy. So all those truckers are going to get grounded.
Well, okay, if you look just at that part, maybe somebody out there who would say, well, you know, they broke the law and they should be punished and blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's say you agree with that for just the sake of discussion. I'm just real curious how they think they're going to get their food and their clothes.
Well,
and their
they're banking on the fact that the big guys.
Yeah, the big trucking companies, they love this. The Canadian Truckers Association supports the mandate. The Canadian Truckers Association denounced the convoy. These big outfits with 2,000 rigs, they are quite confident they can take over the entire market share of the independents. I haven't heard them say that, but they probably could. So we're still going to get whatever it is, whatever widgets and foods that they're bringing in those trucks, that's not going to stop. It only became in peril when the independents started blocking the roads. And a lot of those independents, these guys could get jobs at the big outfits if they wanted to, but they like being independent.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have the same thing
so
here.
They're rebellious,
I mean,
and they're precisely the people that don't get vaccinated.
True.
A lot of these guys are just absolutely adamant that they won't get vaccinated. But if you were dependent on cross-border trucking for your livelihood, well, then it's the end of the road.
Yeah. Well, and at this point,
why now is the bloody end of the pandemic?
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, at this point, we've seen, Bill, what was that guy telling you? He had five staff that all went on a staff retreat.
And he was like the fifth or sixth guy in the rig, and they all got... They all got the virus, and they were all vaccinated except him, and he didn't get it.
Oops. And that's happening a lot.
Things. That into, you know, how ridiculous it was to impose the mandate now. I mean, you're forcing them to get vaccinated at a time when more and more people are wondering, are these vaccines doing any good at all?
I really like your...
are admitting that they're not as good as we thought.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I think one thing that always frustrates people is, you know, when you can't make sense of things, then it's easy to say, well, maybe that's just not true. But when you shine the light on the large trucking outfits crushing the little independent guys, it's like,
yeah, I hadn't heard that.
It's been a subtext throughout this whole pandemic. Big business is just far more adept at gaming the regulations, at lobbying for, you know, tweaking the regulations. Like, look at this whole thing. We had in Canada, the big box stores were allowed to stay open.
Yeah, we had that here.
A lot of the small retailers were forced to shut. I mean, what a kick in the head that was. Like, hundreds of thousands of people were bankrupted. And the politicians that did that, these were guys that campaigned as being the spokespieces, you know, for the little guy, for the small business community. And they absolutely devastated them. And you can see it in the restaurant industry as well. You know, all throughout this pandemic, big business has been far more, you know, better at sort of staying afloat and adapting to the situation. And in Canada, it's literally hundreds of thousands of businesses have been bankrupted.
I don't even know how many here. Same thing, though.
Yeah, it'd be huge.
We had, we have to take a break. Let's do that. But when we come back, we had somebody call in and wanted to know if it was against Canadian law to be in a convoy. So maybe not park in front of the Capitol, but I'm thinking, like, be in a big thing like this. Is that actually part of a law, or is that something they just made up for this emergency? And we will get your answer when we come right back. Our guest is William Walter Kay, and you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Be told you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curves, flattening the hills. Someday the mountain might get them, but the law never will. Making their way the only way they know how. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow.
I figured Dukes of Hazzard would be a good shout-out to the independent truckers.
It was actually about moonshiners, but we can make it about truckers.
Hey, you know what? What's wrong with moonshiners?
Hey,
don't be a hater.
No. No, I won't be.
Government wrecked that, too. What are you, a sellout?
No.
Okay, hey, we forgot to give out a free promotion because if you live in the Reading area, we went to New China 2. It's a Chinese restaurant over there on Hartnell and Churn Creek.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken over where somebody's dragon or somebody was. Anyway, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Great food, great service.
Yeah.
Definitely
really,
a thumbs
really
up.
Super fast.
Yeah. Go by and if you like Chinese, you can't get any better Chinese. It was that good.
It was that good. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, we had made a mental note that we were going to say something about that today because, I don't know, there's not a lot of places anymore where you can go and, I don't know. We live in a smaller place. We have not a lot of choices, but they do a good job. So, okay, William, what about the laws regulating,
convoys?
Being in some kind of a convoy like
well,
that?
Well, there's nothing illegal about driving along in a group. I mean, I guess you could argue that once you establish that their intent was to do some harm, like overthrow the government, you could argue that that activity was sort of gave life to the conspiracy, but in general, that is not. They were starting to break the law because they were simply obstructing traffic. They were blocking the road. They were refusing orders to move. There's even sections in the criminal code about, you know, blocking roads, et cetera, if the intent is part of some larger criminal plot. There's specific sections there. But no, they only began breaking the law when they parked their trucks in the middle of the street or parked their trucks on some of these major bridges and what have you. That became the criminal offense.
But if they kind
the
of just, like, itself. Let's just say, because I'm one of those people who's like, well, what about, what if they just all drove together and they drove slow? Like they, but they kept driving.
At some point, you're obstructing traffic. I mean, if you're going like 2 miles an hour, you're obstructing traffic. Well, these are highway traffic offenses.
Okay.
I guess if you're doing it en masse. I mean, it's not so there's a lot of precedence about this, but if you're doing it en masse,
okay,
you're obstructing traffic. So you're conspiring to obstruct traffic. But there are specific provisions about, you know, blocking public thoroughfares and what have you. This is against the law in every city in the world, and it has been since we've had
so
roads.
Besides the guys that had guns in the trailer and that kind of thing, and they had said that they wanted to overthrow the government, the people who really probably knew nothing about that, who all kind of descended on Ottawa just trying to force a conversation about the mandates.
Well, that's actually incorrect. The guys with the diagonal dudes at Coots, Alberta, they were their own shtick for sure. But this Operation Bear Hug, which was this plan to bottle up Ottawa and block all the major border crossings, that came from the central organizers of the convoy. That wasn't a fringe group. That was a central group. And they were the ones, you know, beaking off about forcing the governor general to dissolve the government. So, yeah, keep that in mind. That is not there were fringe groups, and there were the sort of central planners. The central planners are deeply implicated in this whole Operation Bear Hug, even though there's no indication that they had firearms.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
our media has pretty much made it about the mandates. That's the only reason they were there. It was just to protest the mandates. They haven't really, you know, we don't do investigative journalism in our country
that's
anymore.
The problem.
It's too much work.
Well,
they will probably bring it out a little later. We'll see. It depends on how much of a issue that Trudeau and these guys want to make out of it. I can't quite ferret out what their plan is. I know who their enemies are. And I know they have a lot of enemies in Western Canada, and they would love to use this as a pretext to throw a pretty wide net and go after a lot of those people. But I'm not sure they'll be able to do that. I think in general they scored points in it. The Canada's a very divided. Like the people in Ottawa, the Eastern Canadians, they really wanted this thing crushed. It didn't have a lot of support. This was mostly something that was popular in Western Canada. And it was, it's turning into a bit of a disaster. But as far as an activist project, it's fairly impressive. I mean, this is a group that really didn't come together until January the 15th. And by the end of January, they'd raised almost $10 million. And they'd gotten, several hundred vehicles into downtown Ottawa, which is a long ways away. So it was impressive on that. The central organizer was a female vocalist in a country rock band from Medicine Hat, Alberta, which is also not very far from where I'm currently sitting. So given this was, to a large extent, a real grassroots thing, it sure went off like a rocket. And good to them. And I hope they managed to squirrel away some of that money for themselves, because whatever they didn't, the man's going to get that for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because what that has done in a lot of places in Canada and in the U.S. has made the people who have been clinging to these mandates decide that, we probably don't need to have those now.
Yeah, a lot of states are starting.
That definitely happened in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, like even in California, they decided we didn't need masks inside anymore. Not that we were wearing them, but...
a lot of states are setting dates.
We still have that here.
Oh, you still have to wear a mask inside?
Yes, in Saskatchewan. That is going to be lifted, hopefully, at the end of the month. And they just eliminated the vax pass. But they seem to be locally cowing to the demonstrations, because the last 2 or 3 weeks, there's been some fairly big and really... boisterous demonstrations in Saskatchewan and Alberta. The gig is up here for sure.
Yeah,
I honestly believe if he reverses himself again, the premier of this province, the legislature building is going to get stormed.
Yeah,
I mean, there are that many people who are furious.
Well,
we have had just these brutal lockdowns here.
Yeah, they got a lot of attention here too, and I think a lot of our politicians are looking at this going, hey, we don't need this kind of trouble, and maybe we need to take another look at this and start putting some dates on when we can start eliminating some of this.
Well, because when they can raise $10 million in no time at all, obviously there's a lot of support.
Like a few days, yeah. And there's rumbles now that truckers here are considering making a move on D.C., putting some convoys together and making the run. So it'll be interesting to see.
I'm surprised it didn't happen there first.
I know.
Because these independents, they're doomed. If you're a lot of these independents, these cross-border runs, that's where the money is, right? If they're kicked totally out of that business, and Biden put it on the Mexican-American border as well. It's not just on the Canadian-American border.
I wonder how much of the actual trucking business
is cross border.
Yeah, there's a ton of business.
I don't know. I've heard some stats. I can't pull them out of the top of my head, but it's big.
Mm-hmm.
You look at how integrated after NAFTA, because I'm sure there's a lot of truckers who can make a living without ever crossing an international border in North America. I'm sure of that, but there's some very busy cross border points in Canada where it's just a steady stream of trucks going back and forth.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's some of these America, Mexican-American border points are pretty busy, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but there's... actual number, I do not know.
Yeah. Well, then you have California that puts restrictions on the trucks as far as the emission controls that other states don't have. So if you're an out-of-state trucker and you don't have the proper emission controls to drive in California, you pretty much can get to the border and transfer to another truck. And that was part of the problem they were having with the supply chain down at some of our bigger ports. You can't get enough trucks in there to haul the stuff off. It's because a lot of the out-of-state truckers can't haul in California. And I mean, they've got it so screwed up. They said, oh, well, that's great legislation. All the other states will follow suit. Well, I don't think anybody's followed suit on California on that one, because that's just too big.
No. Yeah, we lead the way in things that you shouldn't do. Just watch us and then don't do that.
Well, Marshall McLuhan said, California is where the future comes from. So
yeah.
I hope not, too. They are certainly going down the green road.
Well, I think 2021 was the first year they had more people leave California than actually came into California.
Oh, we just had massive redistricting for our, everything. The congressional districts, the county representation, the boards of supervisors in the counties. And we lost a congressional district because the population decreased. And a congressional district in California is about 775,000 people.
Yeah, that's a bunch.
You know, that's tragic because, you know, it could be such a booming and prosperous place. It is a victim of eco-imperialism.
Oh, sure it is.
It's a victim of environmental regulations that are designed to suppress economic activity.
Yeah.
And in Western Canada, you know, we've got resources that are just, you know, be the envy of the entire world that we can't get anywhere near due to the federal government's restrictions. There was an earlier convoy in 2019, same sort of people, in fact, one of the same organizers as the Freedom Convoy, and it was to protest environmental regulations on the oil and gas industry. This went in 2019. What you're seeing now happened 3 years ago, before COVID. There was an On to Ottawa convoy. It kind of fizzled, didn't you know, block all the traffic, but this isn't the first time we've tried it. And it's many of the same people involved in both. There's a really wide divide in Canada, and the resource-based western and northern parts of the country are, like California, suffering from profound economic suppression, underdevelopment, not just undevelopment. You know, external forces are proactively undermining the economy. If they just left well enough alone, we would be booming here.
Oh yeah.
But they're proactively subverting it. And there's a lot of stuff dealing now. There's a federal government is taking this opportunity of the emergency measures to cancel or to stop funding on a major pipeline to the Pacific coast again. It just they never miss a beat, these guys.
No, they don't. And just to kind of go back on the California thing, I'm sure this happens in other places as well, but I always hear from people that they're upset about what's going on and blah, 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 and then when it comes down to it, they tell you that they don't vote. Well, it doesn't matter because there's so much voter fraud. It's like, you know, I can help you with that because here we push this big recall on Governor Gavin Newsom, and a million people who were registered Republicans, whether they vote that way or not is another matter, but they were actually on the books as registered Republicans, opted not to cast a ballot in the recall. So, really, do they have to cheat? I would submit, no. They just need to wait for you not to vote. So, for the people out there that are thinking it doesn't matter, it's like, well, crazy.
Well, a good tradesman doesn't blame his tools, you know. If the political parties can't mobilize people to vote, then the political parties have to look at themselves. I'm looking at some of the elections that we've seen in Canada, and I encourage people not to vote because there's, you know, that the uniparty is in effect here. Like you wouldn't believe in the States, you just have no choice whatsoever. The candidates are singing like a choir. So in some of these instances, a really low voter turnout is a real statement that the public isn't buying it.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, they're not legitimizing this fraud.
Mm-hmm.
See, in Nevada, they have on their ballot, they have, you know, do you want this guy, this guy, this guy, this lady, or this guy? And then they also have none of the above. None of the above
yes,
is always
an option.
I wish they
all had that.
And I do too. I really wish that they all had that. Because then if people were with anybody, that would really be, I think that's a statement. But not voting kind of just looks like you didn't show up.
Several years ago, you're called the Yellow Vest Movement in France, not even several years ago, it's like 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
Massive movement. In the national election, just prior to the outbreak of the Yellow Vest Movement, 1 in 12 ballot was destroyed publicly by the voter. Like, people were walking in, asking to have their ballot, lighting it on fire, ripping up the little pieces, you know, writing swear words on it. That's how many people were going in and doing that.
That would be a, that is a statement, although it would not be, it not, would not be reported, but that's pretty...
Well, in France, they have to record that. They have to record all destroyed
ballots. They do.
That is what, so they do. That's how we know that statistic.
Oh, my God. Well, that would be so much
also
fun.
It's on the eve of that major breakout. So it would, you know, you can see that people are at the boiling point.
Yeah.
When there's, you know, low voter turnout or people voting none of the above. It's a real statement that people are disengaged from their own government, that they no longer sort of accept their little authority.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, so where do you think this will go? You think all these people will be, you think they'll carry it all the way out since they've already started?
It's confusing because a lot of them, they're going to be charged with nothing more than, like, basically parking offenses. I mean, that's your crime, is you park your truck in the middle of the road. That isn't the sort of thing that gets you a lot of heavy time. I fear a lot of those truckers are going to lose their rigs permanently, but a lot of them, if they're determined not to get vaxxed and they were a cross-border trucker, I guess it didn't make any difference to them. Because the judges are saying, you know, you get bail if you leave Ottawa, I cannot envision the courts, you know, flying these people back to Ottawa for what's basically, bylaw offenses, traffic offenses. So I think a lot of them are going to be let go. I think whatever sort of money there was to be grabbed will be grabbed. And I think that CSIS, the sort of state intelligence network, is going to do a lot of snooping. But I don't really get – initially there was a period I thought they were really going to crush them. It's going to look like Tiananmen Square. That didn't happen. I'm not really sure what Trudeau's master plan is. Whether or not he's going to be like his father and just keep extending this state of emergency for several months. You know, I don't perceive the country's, now that the blockades have ended, I don't see any emergency. They could argue, well, still, the people who did that are still around. Like, about 2 days ago, they busted a bunch of guys who were planning to re-block the Ambassador Bridge between Windsor and Detroit. So the federal government might be arguing, yeah, they didn't get arrested, but they're still out there, and they're still planning to do this again.
Exactly.
So this is the reason why we have to keep, you know, intercepting everyone's phone calls and doing what we have to do to monitor these groups. So they're, you know, like, never let a crisis go to waste. Use this as an opportunity to build the state's surveillance and repressive apparatus. Learn what lessons they can. But
I think your guys are hanging out a lot with our guys. We've got to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. Hold that thought, William. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Because most of the people who were involved in that were in it either to support the folks that were standing up against the mandates. And I know in this country there's been a lot of talk about truck drivers doing that because, let's face it, through the whole thing with the last 2 years, the only way most of us got anything was somebody delivered it.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, oh, well, we have trains. You know, things get, you know, transported on trains. Point of fact, trains don't deliver to UPS. Yeah. Or to the Postal Service.
Or like, to the grocery store.
Or to the grocery store. That's your trucks pick them up. So it's a really important lifeline. And I think your point is well taken, William, that it was interesting they waited till the mandates were basically not needed. Well, we could fight about whether they were ever needed. Obviously, they didn't work. So that had become pretty clear. So why do it right now? I think your theory is a hot one.
Do you think he'll go as far as to confiscate those trucks and not give them back?
There's going to be a lot of fines attached to them. And, yeah, I would suspect that most of the trucks are gone. There's a couple of major lawsuits going against the convoy organizers. I know that the city of Ottawa is going to try to recoup all of its additional policing costs, and that's coming in at over $1 million a day.
Ooh.
So any assets that get grabbed, I'm pretty sure, because there's going to be individual lawsuits against and the companies that were involved in this. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure any vehicle that's being impounded, or most of them, I'm predicting, are going to eventually get auctioned, and all that money will go to the government or to the claimants in these class action suits.
Wow.
I would think that some of these cross-border truckers would think twice about hauling into Canada if they get caught up in something like that and lose their truck.
As long as you avoid any sort of political protest, you know, they're getting their vehicles seized because they blocked those streets for so long.
Right.
And they caused this grief with their horn honking and what have you. There's a class action suit about that. So any other trucker, if you keep your nose clean, you don't get involved in anything political, I don't anticipate you getting into any trouble. I think that any trucker who crossed that border now with the intention of blocking traffic or engaging it, using his vehicle for political purposes, he would be really asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we're in the emergency.
Yeah, it's a little more serious.
But
at this
end
point.
Of the day, how do you prove that? Because like there were people who went to our Capitol who were like on the back side of the Capitol and had no idea what was going on the other side of the Capitol, or they just were in D.C. that day and went home before even that started. But because of the big net,
this trucker protest in Ottawa went on for 21 days.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they built bandstands. They had rock guns.
No, I know. So when they throw out the net, though, I guess
it wasn't something you do for an afternoon. No, they've been there a long time. There's no mystery about that this was a political event, and there's no mystery they were blocking all the downtown traffic in the city of Ottawa. I don't think how they could. No one's going to say that. You know, I just sort of I didn't know what was going on. This was
not if they were there, but when they start doing I guess my point in saying that was they started throwing. As soon as they started the deep surveillance and throwing out the net, they started reeling in people at our end who were, I mean, they were not involved. They had nothing to do with it. And I just wonder if it'll kind of go that way with you, or do you think they have enough real guys?
If it turns into serious stuff, like anybody who donated money to it could get sued, technically.
That's true, too.
You can't pay people to harass other people. So I think a lot of the donors are starting to shake it rough in Canada now. So there are people who were donating, you know, $15,000, $20,000. A lot of the sort of smaller and medium-sized trucking firms in Canada, that they were donating, you know, five-figure amounts to this cause. And I bet you some of those are starting to sweat it now. I mean, is it going to come back at us, you know?
Right.
So it's really put a chill into those people, which is no doubt the plan.
I was just going to say, because, I mean, I see stuff like that and I think, oh, here's another good another good way for these guys to scare people into not speaking their mind.
Oh, they talk about doxing. You know, every person who donated to the cause now has been doxed illegally, and the National Broadcasting Service is releasing the names.
Now, for people who don't know what doxing is, explain that.
Exposing you sort of the name, address, the information about people online. And some hackers out of nowhere have hacked into the GoFundMe and the GiveSendGo websites and have exposed all the, there's already some information that they exposed publicly, but they've got it all out now, and they're splashing this all over the internet, and then the local Canadian mainstream media is participating in this.
Wow.
And typically, you know, when the shoe's on the other foot and, you know, somebody else has hacked into something and gotten information involuntarily, you know, as far as the originators are concerned, usually the mass media is reticent about exposing that information. Not with this. And it was clearly the result of hacking. No doubt, once again, CSIS and these groups did it.
Sure.
But all the main donors, if it came from a small business like that, this is all being exposed in the mainstream media. Which is another outrage.
Wow. So what's something else that pretty much isn't being reported that people should know, especially those of us who don't live in Canada and don't know the rules there?
I think most Americans would be pretty under-impressed by how concentrated and compliant the media is in Canada. And it's really down to four or five companies now that just about own every newspaper station, radio station, you know, TV station in the country. And you know, Americans have already talked about some sort of the mass media centralization is a problem there, too, and that there really isn't much diversity of views in the mainstream media. Well, we've got that in spades in Canada. There's, you know, one company I think now owns probably half the newspapers in the country now, and it's highly centralized, and then they're subsidized by the federal government on top of it.
Oh, yeah.
So there's very little diversity of opinion in this country.
That's helpful. So now when people get, I guess I was making assumptions again, so when people get, like, arrested for this and put in jail, how does that work in Canada?
Well, it's the same sort of thing. We have a thing called a show cause hearing. The moment that you're arrested, the government is required to bring you, the police are required to bring you in front of a judge as soon as possible. And we don't have district attorneys. We call crown prosecutors because they're officially servants of the crown, but they operate like a district attorney, and they have to demonstrate to the judge that releasing you immediately is a either you're a flight risk, you're going to leave the territory, or you're going to reoffend, or what have you. And if they can't establish that, the onus is on them to establish that. You do get released. In this instance, they're making it a condition that you leave the city immediately, which probably most people are going to go for. But there's going to be a bunch of them in there that some of them have been accused of assaulting officers or doing other things. Those guys aren't going to get released. Or else you're going to have to post some hefty bond. And I don't see how, because none of them are from Ottawa, so I don't have them. But the criminal process, even though the language is quite archaic and different, it's not that different from what you'd get in the States. Because a lot of these guys, these aren't career criminals or anything like that. A lot of these guys probably don't have any criminal records at all. So the courts are going to be really reluctant to hold them for this, unless they did something a little more than just park their vehicle in the middle of the road. What those guys should really worry about is losing their commercial licenses, which most of them are going to, and losing their rigs. But I think a lot of them viewed this as sort of a suicide mission in the first place economically because they were doomed either way. But it's impossible to predict what the if Trudeau's got some sort of hook coming, some sort of additional strategy coming, I don't know what that is. It might peter out as it is. You know, already it's de-escalating very quickly now, so it might just peter out completely, and that is the end of it. My question is, how long do they plan to keep these mandates on cross-border trucking in effect? I mean, it made no sense to put them on in the first place. It made no sense to put them on this late in the game. So what's their end game?
Yeah, that's true.
If this is going to go on for like a year or something, they are definitely going to be running a lot of people out of business, or they're going to simply force them to get vaccinated.
Well, and at this point, it's going to be very difficult for them to lift those mandates after they've made this.
After all, yeah,
made this move.
They go through all this trouble just for a 2-week mandate. That wouldn't make sense either.
No.
So yeah, they've backed themselves into a corner now. They will look stupid if they withdraw them. So
yep.
I don't know what the end game there is. Seven of the main provinces in Canada are pretty well lifting all restrictions and mandates. In Saskatchewan, where I'm at now, they've lifted the vax pass. They're supposed to lift the mask mandates by the end of the month. And just, you know, glory be the day. I just absolutely hate these mask mandates. We're still stuck on them. Every public space in Saskatchewan, you have to wear a mask or you are not allowed in, period.
And is it inside or outside or both?
Just inside. There's no requirement to wear a mask on the sidewalk. But in the apartment buildings, like between when you're in the apartment building, in the common areas, you have to wear a mask.
And are people
shopping, everything?
I realize it's probably like here. It depends on where you are. But are people sick of it and mad about it, or are they just like? I mean, I know we all have our true believers, and they're going to wear their masks forever.
Yeah. Oh, it's the same thing. I mean, I absolutely hate wearing a mask. I get in negative encounters every time I go out. People are telling me to pull it up and put it on properly. I cheat as much as possible. I wear the absolutely cheapest masks I can find. I only if I can grab free ones, I do it. I'm not going to spend a dime on this. I was escorted by the police out of the Good Life Fitness Center for refusing to wear a mask. I just absolutely hate them, and I think they're useless. If you want a good laugh, go read what the CDC has. You know, there are great studies on how masks work.
Uh-huh.
You know, they looked at a few cities that used them and a few cities that didn't, and they admit that their studies taken together have almost no informational value. And they have now admitted that most people, like, we needed to know this, the vast majority of people who do wear masks only do it when they are required to do it. When they get home and on the weekends, when they party and socialize and meet with their neighbors, everyone throws them off.
Mm-hmm.
So what epidemiological value has this whole procedure given us? Nothing.
Well, I think they've also determined that the use of a mask is, in this case, doesn't really help.
Oh, no. Even the CDC said it's only a couple percentage points different between a city that uses them and a city that doesn't use them at all.
Yeah. And then how do you actually prove that? Because you've got people coming in and out.
Person, you know, all the mass stuff, all the mass testing, the mass vaccinations, the mass masking, none of this had to happen. You know, the leading epidemiologist said that it's really only about 1% of the population that was at risk of getting anything more than nasty flu symptoms, and they should concentrate the medical resources on the vulnerable population, and the 99% of the population, they could have left entirely alone, and they would have more or less come out with the same result. Yeah, it was, you know, to force sort of, you know, athletic younger people or kids to wear these masks and to get vaccinated, absolutely unnecessary. Those people were not at risk, most of them, of even getting flu-like symptoms.
Isn't that crazy?
There was a small percentage of the population that are easily identifiable due to their medical problems and their age that were at risk of hospitalization.
We need to talk again because that's a whole different deal. Please send me your articles we will. I know we'll chat again because that's a whole big topic of itself. But thanks for giving us the heads up on what's going on in Canada.
Yeah, we got another month of this to see where this thing's going to roll out.
We need to talk about it. So let's make a plan for that.
Okay, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to be on the show.
Thanks a million. And you are listening to We the People. If you have missed part of it or you want to send it to a friend, you can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. I cheated, Jeff. So we could put a convoy.